every time I'd walk through there, I'd be like pushed, like shirt pulled, tie pulled, all that sort of stuff, like called names and everything like that. And there was just this one time where I just couldn't control myself. I didn't know what to do. I boiled over inside and ended up like belting two of them, like pretty severely. So.
And part of you'd rather be the abuser than the one being abused.
Yep.
That's Nathan Schultz. He's a mountain of a man who was scary to watch flying into fits of rage when he was living with uncontrollable anger and didn't know why. Nathan fell into a depressive slump for many years and had no idea what was behind it, the distress only increasing his feelings of inadequacy and shame. It all came to a head in 2020 when he made an attempt on his life. Thankfully, he survived and has since been able to find the tools he needs to live a fulfilled life, be a loving father, and help his mates while he's at it. Welcome to Young Blood, the award-winning volunteer podcast dedicated to young men's mental health. My name's Callum McPherson. I'm a journalist, and this is a platform for everyday men to share lived experience stories and show that no matter what you're going through, you're not alone. Suicide is the number one killer of young people, and changing that starts with speaking up. So let's do it. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss a thing. Help us reach more people by taking 10 seconds to give the show a rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you've got some feedback on this conversation, I'd love to hear it. You can vote in the poll and leave a comment on every Spotify episode. I read them all.
Trigger warning, if you find anything spoken about in today's episode distressing, please contact Lifeline on 13 11 14.
The Young Blood Men's Mental Health Podcast is a volunteer community service and we rely on community support to bring this show to you. This episode is sponsored by Ski for Life, a charity committed to promoting well-being and suicide prevention. They've been running their annual ski relay on South Australia's Murray River for more than a decade, raising money to support community mental health initiatives. You can find out more about their cause at skiforlife.com.au.
Nathan, you're a big dude. When did you have your growth spurt?
My growth spurt, like all through primary school and that, I was just your stock standard height, everything like that, just fitting with the crowd and everything like that. Probably through years 9, 10 or 10 and 11 is when I really shot up, you know, about a foot over a year period.
Yeah, right. Sort of. Do you remember the growing pains?
Yeah, absolutely. In my knees, mate. They're still probably feeling them today. They've copped a bit of a battering, but yeah, they were definitely stiff and sore for a little while.
Life changed a bit at that
absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely. Yeah, felt a bit bigger.
Helped with the footy.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Did you change positions at that point?
I did. I was predominantly like a backman before my growth spurt.
With dreams of the ruck.
Oh, I do love it. I wouldn't change it now. But yeah, as soon as I shot up, they were like, oh, in you go, mate. You got the height for it. So live and learn when you're in there. Yeah.
But you're a bit of a squirt in primary school.
Yeah, just average height. Yeah. Average height and real, like, no frame on me
okay.
at all. Like,
no build. Well, stick. I mean, we don't really expect that from when you're like when you're eight or whatever.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, rolling around with a bit of bulk when
couldn't,
I'm 8 years
couldn't
old.
Couldn't predict the beast that you would become.
No.
So you got picked on a bit in primary school though.
Yeah. So in my younger primary school years, like, probably not reception, years 1, 2, 3, there was like a group of like old kids. I don't know, I sort of got focused on a little bit, because when I was younger, I was really quiet. Still am quite a quiet person. I just felt like I would have been like an easy target for someone. You know, in the schoolyard, I'd always be, you know, like thrown in the corner of the fort, like the wooden fort at that time, and like bark chips thrown at me and stuff like that. There was occasions where, you know, I'd gone to the toilet at recess or lunchtime, and then they'd lock the door, turn the lights off and everything like that. And that sort of obviously dissipated when they left, because they were obviously, you know, 2, 3 years older than what I was. And then there was one particular student in my same year who just focused on me in years 6 and 7, just, you know, calling me names, you know, pushing me over, all this sort of stuff when we were playing sport at lunchtime, you know, saying I was, you know, shit ass at everything that I would be doing and everything like that. For no reason, there was no like probing from my part or anything like that. I was the scratching post for this particular person. Yeah. So sort of a span through majority of primary school. Yeah, there was a fair bit going on.
Really affects us, doesn't it? As adults, you're not the first I've had on the show who can remember specific times going back.
Yeah.
30 years now almost.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
And can still remember because
obviously that is trauma. Yeah. At the time, you don't see it yeah. as that. You don't really know how to respond, but it does become a part of us.
It burns into you.
And then you can look back and see how that's affected you
100%.
Years on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you respond to it at the time? Like, what impact did it have on you?
The younger stuff, when I was in, you know, the older group was, you know, getting to me, I didn't really do anything. I would, you know, sort of just cop it, I guess.
Did that mean that you were walking around sad and
yeah.
afraid a lot of the time?
Yeah, a lot of the time. Like when I was there, because it was a very small school, like a really, really small school, like 100 students or whatever. And I'd walk around, I'd purposely avoid where their lockers were. I'd purposely avoid their classroom. Really hard to do because you have to walk past it inevitably, being a small school. And I'd just always be sort of, you know, looking over my shoulder, that cliche saying, to sort of see where they were at lunchtime, where they were at recess and breaks and everything like that. Mm. It was pretty tricky. Yeah.
Yeah. You definitely sort of just normalize being under threat like that
yeah.
too. And so
yeah.
many kids who are bullied at school. It's a very common issue mm. where you got to go to school and you can't get away from it. And yeah. perhaps you don't tell your parents or they can't fully understand.
Yeah.
what that's like and what you're going through. And yeah. so many people just have to suffer through that time in their life until it ends.
Yeah, pretty well.
A big part of why people go, oh, I hate this school.
Yeah. And I never acknowledged or mentioned the younger years of bullying. And when it got to like year 6 and 7, when it was that one kid in my same group, I did tell my mum and dad. And that's sort of when I took things into my own hands sort of thing and just resorted to that violence, that lash out essentially. And that was sort of like a key, because as soon as I did that, it stopped.
Mm.
So I thought, oh, this is going to be a remedy to everything.
Not necessarily something you want to encourage, you know?
Absolutely not, no.
But it is a fact of the yeah. matter that yeah. can resolve things sometimes, but yeah. it can also obviously get you into trouble.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially as you get bigger.
Yeah, well, 100%. Yeah, yeah. And I've worked on like anger and everything like that and violence and stuff a lot over the years, but
when you were young, you learned that yeah, was an appropriate way of dealing with feelings and yeah. making that go away.
Yeah, because I didn't know how to deal with how I felt inside, and I didn't know how to deal with the situation being so young. So I thought, what's the best thing that I can do? And that's what it was. And I can remember the distinct time, place, everything that happened when I did what I did, and then it stopped. From there.
Yeah, like, I don't think anyone can blame anyone who's been getting ragged on for years for finally
yeah.
flipping the switch
yeah.
and going off, but it's all pretty nasty stuff.
You know, absolutely.
Don't want to see it, but
yeah.
especially those younger years, boys in particular,
yeah.
it's real Lord of the Flies stuff.
Absolutely.
Like, the brain's not developed
yeah.
yet. The empathy's not there yet. There's that group mentality of yeah. it's just all about one-upping each other and the social status hierarchy.
Yeah.
And I even think back to times that happened when I was younger where kids were getting bullied, but it was like you weren't even fully conscious of how awful that was because yeah. you weren't the one copying it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think people do remember. They do remember that stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes it comes back later in life. You're like, fuck, that was...
Definitely.
That was awful. What yeah. happened to that?
It burns that in your kid? Memory. Like
yeah.
like exactly what you said. Like you're not mature enough or attuned enough when you're that young to realize the implications it has on someone. And that stuff will stay with someone. If it's on repeat, it'll stay with someone for their whole life. A whole life.
Mm. When did you first fall in a hole when you were a bit older?
I definitely started noticing midway through high school. Midway through high school, I'd be like, just waking up in the morning is the prime example when I sort of started feeling like, you know, What's happening here? Midway through high school, I'd be waking up, just feel like a ton weight is on me, and just couldn't get out of bed, find any excuse not to go. By that time, I was sort of driving and things like that. You know, mum and dad go to work, sort of say, yeah, I'm getting up, not get up,
mm-hmm.
just that sort of stuff. And I didn't really think much of it all through my high school years and stuff like that. Like I was just like, you know what my mum and dad sort of used to say, when we were growing up, when we were younger, or you're just having a flat day sort of thing, or, you know, you're just not.
How common was it?
That occurrence?
Yeah.
Probably weekly. Weekly, at least, you know, once or twice.
Yeah.
Maybe a week I'd wake up in the morning just, nah, can't do this. So I didn't know why.
That become an issue with attendance for
attendance. People? Yeah, it definitely affected my overall outcome. Definitely in year 12, like I didn't get to do SACE or anything like that. I mean, like a TER back then, I didn't do anything like that. I got my SACE to pass year 12, but I did like community studies, which is, you know, you choose your project and you do what you want on it. Woodwork. I did do English and that, but like subjects there, because I knew myself in the years before that I was struggling to get up and go to school. So I thought I'd choose stuff to get me through to pass year 12, but to not stress about and everything like that.
And you just become one of those kids who sort of just doesn't come sometimes and people are not sure why.
Yeah.
Like what's going on? Or?
My attendance was still there, I think, for the most part. But like when I wasn't there was like no questions asked. It was like, whatever. It's just part and parcel of Nath. Like that's him. He just doesn't come sometimes.
And when you reflect on it now, what was behind that? You're not being able to get up in the morning.
Underlying, obviously, depression. Yep. My depression and anxiety of being in a place where you're not sure of people. You're not sure if you're fit. And then just not being mentally there, I guess, and not being like mentally well at that point in time, and not being able to acknowledge that and address it. Looking back on it now, like I always say, like I would have loved to have, you know, done my schooling properly, would have loved to have gone to uni, would have loved to have been like a sports surgeon or something like that. So it obviously affects the flow on in your life. Like if I might have been well and well adjusted and had the mechanisms then to figure out what was going on, this life now might have been different. Like I wouldn't change anything now, but maybe it would have been different if I had those tools back then.
And you were lacking self-worth from a
absolutely
young age, probably connected to the bullying.
Yeah. Yeah. And I still, that's something I struggle with massively right now. Like I feel inadequate a lot of the time for people. Definitely being part of a footy club environment as well, a real masculine environment, you really feel like you need to be like that guy. You really feel like you need to be on top of everything. And, you know, people look at you and like, oh, you're a big bloke, you know, you've got everything going for you and whatever. But like, nah, it's not the case. When you're stuck in your own head and you think you're not doing the right thing or good enough for someone else, it can be a vicious cycle and a flow-on effect that you can't shake sometimes. And
what's that voice been like in your head in the past and still today?
It's a constant, like it's just saying to me, you know, oh, you can't do this. You're not good enough to do that. You're not the type of person who can do that. You don't have the tools to do that. And it sticks in repeat all the time.
Has that been a way of sort of reverse psychology motivating yourself, or is it very much work against you?
Now, probably within over the past, you know, 3 or so years, I do use that as a tool. I'm like, oh, well, I sort of have the conversation with myself in my own head, like, who are you to tell me that you can't do that? You definitely can do that. You're more than capable of doing that. Like, I combat that now because I acknowledge and realize what it is. Before, it definitely wasn't a motivator or anything like that. It was just something digging its claws into my back and just putting me back in my place, essentially.
Does it feel like that's you, or that sort of is something else?
The
negative voice.
The negative voice.
Because you don't control, I suppose, those thoughts coming into your head.
Yeah.
Initially.
Yeah. Well, I think column A and column B, I think it is me to a degree, but it's not me, if you know what I mean. Like it's not
who you want to be.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not who I think I actually am, though. Like it's just the years and years and years of, you know, the bullying, what it stemmed down to, and being told, you know, you're not good enough to do that and this. You almost think it is you because you've been told for so long.
Exactly. That automatic response.
Yeah, definitely.
But it sounds like you used to believe that was true and that had to be you.
Yeah.
And now you know it's not, but you still have those thoughts, but you're able to combat it.
Combat them now, yeah. When I used to have those thoughts or was told those things, I would literally think, that is you. You've got to adhere to that. Listen to all the outside noise. Listen to what these little thoughts are telling you because you know better than it.
And that's part of what kept you in bed in high school.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm like feeling not good enough to even do a simple class or something like that, just because everything was saying to me, you're not good enough for that. You can't do it.
Do you reckon it ever would have happened if you weren't bullied so hard at a younger age?
I definitely think that's impacted it pretty heavily just because of things that were said. You know, those people saying, you know, you're a piece of shit. Why are you here? What are you doing? And all that sort of stuff. And then through high school, like it's kind of similar sort of scenario in the young years of high school. It probably wouldn't have been as heavy.
It's hard to say.
Yeah. Without knowing what that impact's done, yeah, it's pretty hard to say. But I think potentially it still could have been part and parcel of who I am, yeah.
Who'd you talk to about it in high school?
No one. Did not talk to anyone about it.
Were mum and dad pushing you on it?
Didn't really talk to mum and dad about it at all, or my sister, through high school or anything like that. Just didn't acknowledge it, didn't talk about it, just kept going with it. I think because I kind of obviously knew something was going on, but when me and my sister were growing up, like mum and dad didn't acknowledge like any mental health or anything like that. It was always, like I said, you're just having a flat day. You feel a bit shit house or whatever. It was never, oh, there could be something going on, or there could be reasons why you're feeling like this.
So I was like, there was no deeper conversation to have.
No. It's just all surface. What you see on the top, what you see face to face is what it is. There's no deeper implications or anything like that.
So your parents never let you see them struggling?
Not struggling or anything like that. They were good with feelings and stuff like that, like your emotions and everything.
Right.
But like not deep down, if you know what I mean. Like it was just all surface level. Like, oh, you'd cry, you'd be happy. That's just how you are. There's no reasoning behind it. It's just how you're feeling in that particular moment in time. There's nothing else going on.
Which doesn't help you understand the root cause of why you continue to feel a particular way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened with your anger around this time? You know, these depressive feelings, how is that manifesting into anger, and what sort of reactions were you having?
A lot of it would just manifest into like frustration because I didn't know how to deal with it. I'd be asked a few questions at a time or something like that, whether it be at school or at home or whatever. And I just feel like I was just twisting inside because I didn't know how to, you know, answer particular questions or approach situations. So my immediate response was, oh, I feel like twisted inside. So I just need to get it out in the form of yelling or screaming or violence, essentially.
You get easily overwhelmed?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Like if there was a number of things going on, it would just feel like my world would crash. And I didn't know how to deal with it. Didn't know how to compartmentalize things and, you know, dissect situations. I would just implode pretty well. And with the bullying through high school and stuff like that, it was year 10 or 11. And there would be like a thoroughfare through these buildings that you'd always have to walk through to get to different classrooms and things like that. And that's where this particular group who would always give me grief sit. Every time I'd walk through there, I'd be like pushed, like shirt pulled, tie pulled, all that sort of stuff, like called names and everything like that. And there was just this one time where I just couldn't control myself. I didn't know what to do. I boiled over inside and ended up like belting two of them, like pretty severely. And that's when it stopped. There was always passing comments, but I was like, oh, it's worked again.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. So I knew it was bad and I knew I couldn't really control it or I didn't have a grasp on it, but it was the only thing that worked at the time because I didn't understand what was going on. So.
And part of you'd rather be the abuser than the one being abused.
Yep. Definitely, yeah. And that even stemmed past high school as well into relationships and things like that because it was just, I think that was my defense because that's all I knew. I didn't know how else to combat things or anything like that. I didn't know what to do.
Where did you start with trying to change that, understand that?
Probably properly, not till about 3 years ago is when I said, hang on. I need to do something about this, like massively. I just let it go because I just thought that's who I was.
How long were you aware of it before then?
That it was a problem or that I...
Yeah, and that it didn't sit right with who you actually felt you were.
Like after high school, I was like, oh yeah, whatever. It's just who I am. Probably my mid-20s, I reckon. Because it obviously impacted relationships and things like that. And I was like, I hate who I am. I do not like who I am at all. And I had those fleeting thoughts of not liking who I was through high school and stuff like that. But really when I sort of got out into the workforce and all that sort of stuff, I was like, oh, I hate you. Just don't like who I am.
I suppose because you see more of the negative impact on other people that you care about based on your behaviour.
Yeah.
And your behaviour is coming from a place you don't fully understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is you who's...
Who's doing it.
Doing
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And then you see the impact of it.
Yeah, the horrible impact that it has on people. Like I'd wake up in the morning, getting ready for work, and I'd literally like just be looking at myself in the mirror. I'd, oh, I hate you so much. I hate who you are. Like, why are you the way you are?
And what was at the core of that?
Just because I knew that I was affecting people and everything like that, but then. The feelings that I'd be getting, you know, every week and stuff like that inside me, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know why I was getting these feelings. I didn't know what was going on.
Like sadness and anger.
Sadness, yeah. Just a constant weight sometimes, like energy just not there. Like why? I couldn't understand why I was like that. So I just thought, oh, this is me as a person. You're a piece of shit. I hate you. How I felt.
It's a dangerous place to be once you're hating yourself and telling yourself that.
Yeah.
Because that leads into another place which you ended up going to as well.
Yeah.
Being suicidal. Yeah. So what led to that point and when did that happen?
So that was, like I say, I only sort of really did something about three years ago about my mental health and everything like that. So late 2020 was when I made an attempt on my life. So we're talking like a long period of time.
You've been feeling these feelings for more than a decade, couple decades.
Yeah, not liking who I was and everything like that, inadequacy, not being able to do things that I love, all that sort of stuff.
And thinking that. You couldn't change that.
I couldn't change it, yeah.
That was who you had to be.
Yeah. I felt like I was stuck with this person. Mm. Like I didn't have any mechanisms or understandings of what to do with me as a person. And, yeah, it came to a crux in 2020. I obviously remember it pretty clearly. My wife and I, we had a sort of an argument the morning of. She left. And I just had all those overwhelming feelings. I wasn't at work or anything like that. It was over the weekend. And I was sort of sitting there by myself, just thoughts on repeat of like overthinking, overanalyzing like everything, like even stuff that didn't even matter. Like, you know, oh, 2 years ago I did this in a football game. Why did you do that? Like stupid
anything
stuff.
Anything you could think of that was negative.
I'd be pulling everything from left, right and center, pulling everything in. And I had this really heavy weighing feeling on me. My heart just felt like it was going to explode. I just felt just turmoil inside, like I was twisting. I can't explain.
It's like a tornado.
Exactly, like inside. And I can't explain the extent. It was just so amplified on that time. And I did not know what else to do. Like I was so lost because I was like, Nath, this has been going on for so long. For so long.
Just exhausting too.
Yeah. And at that point in time, I was like, I don't want to be here. I did not know what else to do. And that's, when I made an attempt on my life because I didn't want to be a part of who I was anymore. I did not know how to deal with it.
How close did you come?
I'd probably say pretty... pretty close. Yeah, out the back of our house at the time. Yeah.
You have a recollection of how you felt at that moment?
Yeah. Yeah. When I came to afterwards, I was like just lying down on the back deck at the time. And I was just like, how have you sort of let yourself, how have you let yourself as a person, you know, get to where you are right now? Like, what's, you know, life should be, you know, enjoyable and happy and stuff like that. Like, how have you managed to let yourself as a person get this far to this point when you've got people that love you and everything like that?
But you were still alive.
Yeah.
Where'd you go from there?
So after that, my wife come home. And by that time, I'd brought myself just into our walk-in robe. I was lying on the floor. I was beside myself. I wouldn't let her in. And eventually let her in, and she found me and obviously knew what had happened. And she called her mum straight away. Her mum came down, and like, my wife and my wife's mum are amazing. Like, if they saved my life, pretty much. They're the most amazing people, and I can't thank them enough. We sat on the bed for a couple of hours talking, and you know, they just kept reiterating that they loved me and everything like that. And after that, I went.
In that moment, were you happy that you were still alive?
Yeah. I was like, now, like, I knew people loved me and cared about me, but to see the implications that it could possibly have on people around me firsthand, like, if I had died, how heavy that would have been on everyone else around me, and the love that they showed me, I'm like, I don't want to leave people like this behind. Like, I want to be here.
And it took coming that close to show yourself that.
Yeah. And that's probably the proper realization that I had as well. Like, you need to fix yourself. Like, you got to look after yourself. Like,
got to find a way to actually love yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And like who I am, exactly.
Not fight yourself every day.
Yeah. So from there, I went into a SIPS program, the suicide intervention program, at PsychMed. Got through that, and then regularly saw my psych after that for a long period of time. I'm still seeing one now just to keep on top of and work on my anger and things like that, so it doesn't, you know, manifest again. It's something you got to work on and keep on top of.
How'd you go letting yourself be helped?
It's really hard. Because I had it instilled in myself that no one can help me. Like, it's up to me to fix myself. Some random person's not going to be able to tell me, you know, this is what's going to help you. And I was really bullheaded and piggish about that. But then when
that's how you'd always been. No,
100%.
That really exactly helped right. Too much,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. I'd always been so, you know, my way or the highway kind of thing. But as soon as I let my guard down with someone and opened up and, you know, properly let my emotions flow out and understand what's going on, the best thing I've ever done, absolute best thing I've ever done.
What were they able to tell you?
You know, keeping track of your faulty thinking and everything like that, that stuff that's happened to you in the past doesn't shape you as a person. It obviously impacts who you are, and that's why you need help for it, but it doesn't shape you. Doesn't shape the future. That's not who you are because of stuff that's happened to you. And just all control measures and things like that that I practice every day to, you know, just keep my mind healthy.
But them saying to you, it doesn't shape you, doesn't have to be who you are. And just because you've been like this in the past, it's not a life sentence. But was it a case of them just telling you that once? I would think that you had to condition yourself over a period of time to actually believe that. It's not that simple.
Nah, not at all. Like, because I'd had it ingrained in myself so much. I'm like, nah, it is who I am. But there was a lot of kickback in the first few sessions. I'd be like, oh, how do you know that's not who I am? I'd, you know, really question their professionalism.
Yeah.
And, you know, this went on for probably about those particular sessions for about 3-4 months.
And do you, when you look back now, do you feel like you were arguing with yourself more than them?
Yeah, definitely.
They probably knew that too.
100%, yeah. I almost felt like at the start, I was so stuck in the mud.
You're holding on to it.
Yeah,
like definitely. Even though it doesn't serve you and you hate it, you don't know anything else.
That's who I am. So I don't want to let who I know go.
Otherwise, who am I?
Exactly, yeah.
Something and, better.
Yeah, exactly right. You got to reform who you are as a person.
Yeah.
And understand that person wasn't really, really who you were.
Mm-hmm.
And after going through everything, you find out who you actually are when you help yourself.
So how much did you progress, do you feel, in that 3 years? And
a lot, a hell of a lot now, to where I was, to where I am now, especially on the anger side of things as well. Like, I'd lose my shit at the drop of a hat.
Because it seems like the anger was coming from not dealing with this
massively
just abyss that you had in you.
Yeah.
And so as you've dealt with that where it's, the anger used to come from is just not
dissipated pretty well. It's because I've dealt with it, vocalized it, I've got mechanisms that I do to cope with it and everything like that. That it's just not there. And I'm a relatively calm, really calm person.
Yeah, you seem like a calm person.
And it's
hard to imagine you flipping out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't even think, like, when I look at myself now, I'm like, I understand that was me for a long period of time, but I can't picture myself doing it. Yes, I get frustrated still now. Yes, I might get a little bit shitty, but like, I don't explode. I'm not volatile.
You haven't been lobotomized.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So what about when you look in the mirror now? You know, you're a dad. You've just become a dad. Yeah. Congratulations.
It's unreal.
A couple of months ago.
Yeah. And
you can't stop smiling whenever someone says that.
No, it's amazing, that part. There are still days when I do look at myself, though, and I'm like, you know, there's still those fleeting thoughts of, you know, are you good enough to do what you're doing now? But then I'll just stare back at myself and say, yeah, bloody oath, you're good enough to do it, mate. 100%. And that's my combat now. Like what we said before, like, do you use those thoughts to challenge yourself? Absolutely, I do now. I sort of grasped it as a personal challenge to almost say, you know,
that's not who I am.
Exactly. Yeah. And say, I can do that, or I'm good enough for that. I will do that, rather than you can't or you won't.
So given that's not who are you?
That's a great question. Like, I can say now it's, I see someone who I like now. You know, I'm a dad. I'm a husband, and I'm proud of who I am now from where I was. I'm happy to say I do love myself as a person now. There are times when it's hard, and you're always going to have to stay on top of your battles. But who I am now is who I do love.
It's a massive change, isn't it?
Massively, yeah.
And you've been able to help some of your mates as well.
Yeah.
Other people have seen a big change in you.
Yeah.
And if you're walking around that angry and that upset all the time, it's like a dark cloud following you.
Definitely.
You can feel it, but other people can feel it as well, especially those close to you. So they've seen this massive change.
Yeah.
I would think there must have been your mates who've come to you in that period of time, come with their own stuff, because obviously that's what happens.
Yeah.
And I think you've sort of sort a bit of that out as well.
Yeah, definitely. Now at work, I'm the mental health ambassador for our workplace, because it's obviously so important to me, because I know how bloody hard it can get. And if you keep to yourself, if you keep those thoughts in your own mind, it's just gonna boil over and blow up. And my door's open to anyone, whether it be during work hours, after hours, all that sort of stuff. I've helped young fellas out who have been really struggling, people at the moment who are.
How have you been able to do that?
just even just by a simple chat, just talking to them. I've been to two of my mates' very first appointments that been completely adverse to going to see someone. They just needed that support to get through the door and actually go and talk to someone about their struggles and their implications. And just being there for them is unreal. Like, you can see that they've got the confidence that I've been through something and I'm better for it. I'm there with you to make you better, sort of thing.
There's a lot of power in someone who was totally different before and hated that whole idea and then has completely changed their life. It's a strong incentive.
To be a better, or hope a better person as well.
And how they've gone once they have made that jump.
Taken off pretty well. So it's the best thing that they've ever done. It's just openly speaking to someone about it, whether it be once, whether it be three times, whether it be ongoing, just to actually talk to someone and let them know, this is how I'm feeling. I'm not good. I just need to speak to someone.
Footy club as well?
Footy clubs are always a touchy, I think, not touchy subject, but a bit more of a tricky area. I've definitely got mates at the footy club who really understand the mental health aspect of things, but they're still the stereotypical sort
the
of
bravado
macho,
side of it.
Yeah, toxic masculinity side in footy clubs. And I definitely find it harder to approach in a footy club atmosphere. It probably wasn't until...
You pick up on it, though, around the club?
Like
in other boys?
Yeah. You can tell.
Yeah.
When stuff's going on.
Once you've been through it, you see it a lot. Yeah.
And it wasn't until this year when I was having a pretty... Just an average week. I was having a pretty anxious week. I was pretty depressed. Still creeps back. And it came to a Tuesday night for footy training, and I couldn't go. I was just like, I just got to stay home. I can't make it there. I'm just not feeling up to it. And instead of just making up, I'm crook or I'm not going to be able to make it, I've got work. Actually, we've got a Facebook group for the whole football club, and I posted on there explaining, look, mentally I'm just not doing well. I'm not good. I need to stay home and have some time for me, reset myself. And the overwhelming response on that post actually sort of took me back a little bit, even from guys that I thought probably wouldn't acknowledge the mental health side of things. So that was kind of eye-opening as well to see one flip side. Yes, it's a toxic masculinity environment and it might be sort of shunned a little bit, like feelings and all that sort of stuff. But on the adverse side of it, when you really do actually open up and acknowledge, there's a lot more support out there than what you actually think.
Yeah.
It's a lot more understood than what people sort of let on. I think
if you can make that change inside a footy club, you can make it anywhere.
Yeah, definitely.
As well.
Probably one of the hardest atmospheres.
Well, those types of masculine environments are harder to crack, but it also means they're often full of blokes who feel like they definitely can't talk about that.
Absolutely.
And we're all going through stuff, so you can bet that there's plenty of people there who actually need to say something, who would want to, and probably love the opportunity to be able to do it, but with no background in how that goes.
Yeah.
And that's why having a teammate like yourself or a colleague like yourself who's able to, brave enough to have done what you've done to fix yourself, and then to be able to tell your story as well, that's what people relate to. You're them in a way.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
that relatability.
That's how we make a change culturally over years and years. It's just examples of men like yourself in those environments being that guy. And it's like, I'm a very different guy.
Yeah.
I've still got the good qualities that people always liked. Yeah. I'm still a hard nosed ruckman.
Yeah.
All that stuff remains the same, but I'm a much happier, more effective, loving, just better person. And that's because I was able to face these feelings that I had inside of myself.
Yeah.
And a big part of this, I think, is encouraging men that you're going to be a better protector, a better provider, just so much happier day to day. And you'll be the man you want to be if you're able to actually confront this stuff. And then nothing takes more bravery then facing that that darkness or that tornado or whatever you want to call it that you felt inside of yourself.
Yeah.
And as long as you run from that, the effect, the external effect of that is just going to get worse and worse, and more people are going to get brought into it. And then there's going to be that self-loathing aspect too, because you're technically doing it, but it's like you're not in control of it as well. And and actually the answer isn't to hate yourself more and take yourself out. It's to look inward and try to love yourself. Yeah. And you can't do that alone either.
That's so important. Loving yourself is massive. Love who you are as a person.
Not easy to do that.
Absolutely.
And you actually need tools to do that, especially 100%. If you've been conditioned not to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like you said, you come from a loving family. You've got great parents and sister.
Yeah.
And you've still ended up feeling this way
because
it doesn't matter sometimes.
Exactly.
There's so many influences. It's so complex.
Yeah. You can have the best life, best upbringing, best everything. Your life can be on a silver platter, but you can still.
Sometimes that'll only make you feel more guilty because you feel how you feel, but it's not how you have to feel.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I've learned that firsthand. You don't have to feel that shit all the time. Vocalize it, speak to someone. Be proactive. If you know you're feeling that way, I know it's so hard, and a lot of people still find it hard. Honestly, like hand on heart is the best thing I've ever done. Changed who I am as a person, as a whole, and for the better. It's unreal.
And lucky to have your wife.
Mate. Yep. Yep. She's pretty much the one that's made me understand, like ever since we were together, is understand mental health and that there is actually something going on. And I pushed back at her so much, obviously, because we've been together since 2009. So she's seen my volatile years. Like I used to like scream in her face, have like real harsh arguments and, you know, be abusive to a T and all that sort of stuff because I had no control, no mechanisms or anything like that. She stuck by me. She said, Nath, you've got to do something. You've got to see someone. You've got to get your anger under control. So she's always supported me through absolutely everything.
She could see the good in you.
Yeah.
A bit Star Wars-y.
even through all that, there's something in there that's good. And she knew that she'd always say, you've got, like, even through all that, like, even through when I was still struggling and stuff, she was like, there is such a soft, gentle and loving side to you that I can see in there. Just go and see someone or do something. And now that's coming out now, which is unreal. So without her, might have been a different story, but she's made me really, really understand that, you know, your mind's a delicate thing. You've got to look after it. You've got to do the right things by it to make sure you're okay. It's unreal, yeah.
Well, thanks, Nath.
Appreciate it, mate.
It's a powerful story, man.
Thank you.
Coming from a man like yourself. And, just goes to show what is possible. And I think that whole notion of you don't have to believe that you have to be whatever version of yourself you don't like. And that the answer isn't to throw yourself away.
It's absolutely
to do that work and get some help. And things can be better pretty quickly.
Absolutely.
I know 3 years sort of sounds like a long time, but it's not as long as the 20 years before that
where
you were in pain.
Pretty quick turnaround to think about it in that time aspect. It's turned around pretty quickly. Better for it. Absolutely.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode. If you like what we're all about, support us by following Youngblood Men's Mental Health on Instagram and Youngblood Mental Health on TikTok. Every podcast episode is recorded in professional quality video and they're all up on our Youngblood Men's Mental Health YouTube channel. So please show some love and subscribe. Thanks to our local business supporters, Herd Financial. You can find everything there is to know about the podcast at youngbloodmensmentalhealth.com. And most importantly, please share these stories with anyone in your life who needs to know they're not alone. We're all in this together. Catch you next time.